Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. June 6, 2022. Michael Leitman, on the Times of Israel, Why the World Believes We Killed Sharon Abu Akleh? On May 24, App News reported, review suggests Israeli fire killed reporter, but no final word. 2 days later, CNN echoed App News, declaring, Sharon Abu Akleh was killed in targeted attack by Israeli forces. The Palestinians refused to allow forensic examination of the slug that killed Abu Akleh, and Israel already stated that no Israeli soldiers were firing any shots at the time of her death, but the world has made up its mind. Following the reports, and in view of Israel's stance, a student asked me this. The most amazing thing to me is that they determined that Israel shot her on purpose, that Israeli soldiers killed a journalist deliberately. I know that an Israeli soldier would never deliberately shoot a civilian because it contradicts everything that every soldier is taught before he is allowed to take the first practice shot, he protests. So how can it be that the world is certain that we did it? That Israel deliberately killed a civilian? My answer to him was simple. The world wants it to be this way. The whole world wants to adopt this version because this is how it wants it to be. The whole world wants to accuse Israel of more and more crimes until the very existence of the Jewish state is delegitimized. This is why not only CNN and App, but almost the entire world media is against Israel and gives false accounts of what is happening. Worse yet, even if Israel could examine the slug that killed Abu Akleh and proved that it did not come from an Israeli gun, no one would believe it. In fact, no one would even bother to read Israel's report. They would assume that we are lying even before they read the first word. Trying to confront the Palestinian arguments on their level is a lost cause. We can say whatever we want, but the world will not listen to a single word, and cheer instead for every word that comes from the Palestinians. If we want legitimacy, we need to take a completely different approach. We will earn the world's legitimacy to live in the state of Israel when we begin to live like the people of Israel, and stop trying to live like the rest of the world. Subconsciously, this is what the world expects from us. The world blames us for everything that is bad in this world because they feel, even if they do not admit it to themselves, that we have the power and the obligation to make the world good. And since the world is not good, it is our fault. Humanity does not believe that anyone has that capability but us, Jews, and does not expect anyone else to help the world emerge from its crises. They expect this only from us, and resent us for not doing so. This is the real reason why anti-Semitism intensifies every time there is trouble. The Palestinians are attacking us, not because they want the land back, although this is how they feel, but because we are not using the land for the purpose that the world entrusted it in our hands. We are the nation that was told that if we do not unite as one man with one heart, God will turn the mountain on us, like a vault. We are the nation that committed to loving others as much as we love ourselves, and we are the nation that was commanded to be the light of the nations, to be a model of unity for the entire world. We are also the nation that broke our oath time and time again, until we were exiled from the land precisely for hating one another. 75 years ago, the League of Nations gave it back to us, but since we have not built a model society, the world wants to take it back from us. The press merely reflects the sentiment of the world. If we restore our unity, the world will change its attitude toward us, and the reports will change accordingly. Until we do so, we should not expect any positive coverage from the media. You will find more on the link between Jewish unity and hatred of Israel in the Jewish Choice, Unity or Anti-Semitism, Historical Facts on Anti-Semitism as a Reflection of Jewish Social Discord, and Like a Bundle of Reeds, Why Unity and Mutual Guarantee are Today's Call of the Hour. Medium published my new article Imagine Your Child Is Not Your Own. Imagine a man becoming the father of a baby boy after many years of anxious childlessness. The longing intensifies the father's love for his son, and he plunges headlong into fatherhood. He holds his baby boy after meals so he can burp, talks to him, and changes his diapers. As his son grows, he teaches him everything he knows, takes him to little league practices and cheers with the other proud parents during games. Whenever his son gets in trouble at school, with other kids, or with his teammates, his dad listens and gives him some fatherly advice. And every night, before he falls asleep, his dad sits by his bed and reads him a bedtime story. The father is so proud of his son that his friends at work tease him about it. They say that he thinks there are no other children in the world except his son, and because he loves his son so much, he doesn't like other children. The father laughs, but admits that as with any teasing, there is some truth to it. Then, one day, two police officers and a social worker knock on the door and show the father papers proving that there was a terrible mistake and babies were switched at birth. His son is not his son, but someone else's, and his son's biological parents have already been notified and want him to come live with them as soon as possible. Their son, who is his biological son, also wants to get to know him and come live with him. The social worker and the officers explain that his son would have to go live with his biological parents. We may not be aware of it, but the father's tragedy is very similar to a process that all of humanity is experiencing, with one major difference. In the case of the father, the loss is unbearable. In the case of humanity, we are about to find out what a nasty son Weve had, and what a wonderful son is about to replace him. The stranger's son we have been raising is our ego. Ego has demanded everything from us, and felt no gratitude. Every time we satisfied him, he demanded more. Finally, he demanded more than we could provide. We have depleted the supply, we have run out of money, run out of resources, and run out of strength. What's more, our son, ego, has been inciting us, against all other boys, made them look awful in our eyes, and made us hate them and their parents. He even made us fight against them. He blinded us to the fact that we really needed those other kids and parents, that they gave us everything we have, work, companionship, and everything we needed in life. Because we have reached the end of our strength, we are beginning to open our eyes and see that ego is not such a beloved son, but a monster. Even more important, we are beginning to realize that he is not really our son, and nothing really binds us to him except his lies about our connection. Gradually, we are discovering that our real siblings are everyone else. They, all of humanity, are our family. Now that we are beginning to realize the truth, we can develop a new attitude to other people. Initially, we will take baby steps. But as more and more people recognize the truth about their ego and about their attitude toward others, we will learn to walk more confidently together. We will learn to care about others where before we felt only indifference or even spite. We will direct our malice toward our enemy within, and by doing so, we will defeat our one and only enemy, our fake son, ego. Michael Leitman, on the Times of Israel, no surprise, UN promotes Palestinian sovereignty plan with Jerusalem as capital. Last week, in peculiar proximity to Israel's Jerusalem Day celebrations, it became known that the United Nations is working intensely with the Palestinian Authority and a Jordanian architectural design company to establish Eastern Jerusalem as the capital of a Palestinian state by 2030. Drawing up elaborate plans for the expropriation of Israeli land. The plan, built by UN Habitat, the United Nations Programme for Human Settlements, the International Peace and Cooperation Centre, IPCC, a Palestinian urban planning and development organisation, and Arab Tech Jardiner, an engineering and architectural design firm, aims to see parts of the Oslo Accords appealed. It also envisions Jerusalem as the capital of the State of Palestine, its beating heart, and its foremost metropolitan area, and has drawn up elaborate plans for the expropriation of Israeli land for the project. While it is unsettling for Israeli ears to hear such news, we should not be surprised. As I have written and stated multiple times, the UN, which represents the nations of the world, does not want us here. It regrets its 1947 decision to divide the land between Jews and Arabs, and would like to see Israel wiped off the map. We should not be surprised that this is happening, since we ourselves are making it happen. There is a very simple formula for the acceptance of the Jewish people among the nations: when we unite with our enemies, they unite against us; when we unite with each other, our enemies unite with us. Jerusalem should be the spiritual center of the Jewish people. In other words, it should be a powerhouse of unity, a model of solidarity and cohesion for the whole world. The Hebrew name of Jerusalem is Yerushalayim, from the word Zirshlama, city of wholeness. This is the place where all the conflicting forces of the world should complement one another and benefit from each other rather than try to destroy one another. Currently, the conflicts are there, but complementarity is nowhere in sight. This is why the city is so full of strife, conflicts, and violence, and why the nations vie over it. We should not expect peace to prevail in Jerusalem until we make peace among ourselves. We are the ones who have been commanded to unite as one man with one heart and thus become a light to the nations. We are the ones who gave the world the motto "Love your neighbor as yourself," and we are the ones who are expected to demonstrate it. This is the meaning of being a light to the nations. After World War II, the nations decided that we deserved another chance and voted to establish a Jewish state in the historic land of Israel. On the surface, the decision was motivated primarily by the horrors of the Holocaust, but behind it was the expectation that we would also return to our calling. But we have not returned to our calling to be a light of unity to the nations. Since our return, we have demonstrated division, hatred, collusion with enemies against our own people, and hatred among factions of the Jewish society. We have let down humanity. The only way we can remain in our historic land is by returning to our historic mission to be a beacon of unity to the world. When we recognize the sovereignty of love for one another over us, the world will recognize our sovereignty over Jerusalem. Medium published my new article, "Climate Crisis, Not Child's Play." The planet is running out of time. Humanity is utilizing the resources of the world faster than it can recover naturally. That is the United Nations blunt assessment of the climate crisis for the occasion of World Environment Day, celebrated June 5. This year's theme is "Only One Earth." But beyond the catchy slogans, the fact is that we do not seem to realize that we indeed have only one place to live, planet Earth. We continue to shoot at our own feet with our reckless actions towards our surrounding environment. In spite of how many people keep shouting, talking endlessly about the environmental crisis, how many meetings take place, and how many decisions are made, nothing seems to help. Either we just leave the state of the planet as it is now, ignore all the problems and wait for the next disaster to happen, or we admit that everything that we have done up until now is ineffective and fruitless and finally make the sharp turn required. To raise awareness about the precarious state of the planet, beginning next year, Israeli schools will make classes on the climate crisis mandatory for students of all ages, the Education and the Environmental Protection Ministries recently announced. They will begin integrating an environmental program equivalent to 1 hour per week into the curriculum for students from kindergarten to high school. Will this make a difference, or will it be as unsuccessful as previous efforts to solve environmental problems? The answer does not depend on the hours spent on these studies or who will develop them. Rather, it depends on what is taught and the extent to which students understand the causes of the climate crisis and how to solve it. We know that the severity of the global environmental crisis can be compared to a spaceship coming toward us, to destroy the planet, and that we who live on earth must prepare to avoid being harmed by it. And how do we prepare? We have to explain that the climate crisis is a consequence of a human crisis. So, the solution that will ultimately bring the world into balance is for us to change ourselves, to cultivate positive human relationships and grow closer to each other internally. That is, the heart must expand, not physically, but emotionally. To start feeling the entire world as a part of each and every one of us, and for us, to care for the entire world as we care for ourselves. This is true because nature is a system of integral connections that operates through a hierarchy. What happens on any particular degree in the system affects all the other degrees. The intensity of the impact on the system corresponds with where it stands in the hierarchical ranking. The human race is the highest level in nature, above the inanimate, vegetative, and animal. Therefore, the part of the system that destroys the ecological balance the most are the egoistic actions of human beings that disregard the interests of others, including the other parts of the system of nature. Humanity can do nothing to correct this self-focused tendency until it recognizes that its harmful instinct rules all its decisions and is the primary source of the imbalance in nature. By learning how to build relationships based on mutual understanding, care and cooperation, a positive force is created which is capable of restoring harmony in all levels in nature. This is the crucial truth that must be taught. When we learn how to transcend all of our negative egoistic tendencies and recognize that we are all individual parts in a single, connected and completely interdependent mechanism, we will also comprehend that doing good to others is also good to us. Just as today we are the ones who destroy all of nature, we also have the power to repair it. The planet's countdown is on, but we still have a window of opportunity to control it if we change our thoughts, actions, and desires to upgrade our human relationships. Fostering national unity. Question. Balhar Sulam writes that fostering national love is the key to the success of the economy, education, and security. How can this be done? Answer. This is possible only if we attract the upper light, the upper force, because Jews cannot have national unity. After all, this is a gathering of many completely different, opposite groups of humanity. Question. How can we foster national unity if we have so many different currents? Answer. We need to raise what we are talking about above these currents. Our attitude to ourselves, to the world, to others should be integral. From CAB TV's Spiritual States, April 26, 2022. Glory to Pharaoh. Comment. An interesting letter came from Anna. I have been living in Cairo for 30 years. My husband is Egyptian, we have 4 children. I am a pediatrician and have already gotten used to living here. But it was not easy for me early on. I found you on the internet 3 years ago and have been with you ever since. My husband knows about it and does not mind. But I always shudder when you talk about Egypt as evil, as egoism. I cannot get rid of the feeling that you are also talking about the Egypt I live in, which I started considering my homeland. Why not Greece or Italy, but Egypt? Can you explain? Answer, this particular route is called so. By the way, we owe all the good things to it. No one has done better for us than Egypt. It kept us, saved us, and reared us. We developed into a free nation and wished to become free ourselves. It is all thanks to Egypt. In fact, I do not believe that the Egyptians treated us cruelly. They were very developed people within the framework of earthly life. Very cultured, serious people. And what kind of life was it? How long did they live in total? 25 years. Comment. It is said, and Pharaoh arose and began to oppress the people of Israel, and their work was hard. It says that it was hard and difficult for people. My response, I do not see this as bad, no. I have a very respectful attitude toward Egypt in general, I would even say somewhere deep down a loving attitude, because it brought us up, it formed us. We entered it as a crowd, and Egypt formed us, and raised us, to the level of good egoism. It showed us, with its oppression, what freedom is, the opposite of Egypt. It even sacrificed itself so we would strive for freedom. Question: is Egypt then evil? Answer: of course it is evil. This egoism developed in us, on purpose. Pharaoh is our great friend. Question: so what should I say to Anna? Answer: live and enjoy with the feeling that you are in the right place. Question: what would you say about Egypt as evil and as egoism? Answer: it is the evil that heals. Like poison used to make medicine. Therefore, give respect to Egypt. In short, do not curse, do not spit into the well, but realize that you exist because of it. This well has raised you and made you a nation. Question: so we entered Egypt, as you say, as a crowd and came out a true nation? Answer: nomads who do not know nor understand anything entered. Absolutely. And everything that is in us, we understood, saw, and learned from the Egyptians. Comment: I see. But still you are talking about Joseph and his brothers. My response: and who were they? They did not know or understand anything. Question: so, should I say glory to Pharaoh? Answer: yes. You must kiss the stick that teaches you. Is there another way? It is impossible to advance without suffering. And if suffering advances you, respect the suffering. From CabTV's News with Dr. Michael Leightman, April 4, 2022. The influence of solar activity. Comment: there were periods in history when Earth's electromagnetic field was so weakened it practically disappeared. As a result of this, people's memories were erased in some regions, their consciousness was erased. My response: of course. As a consequence of the influence of this field. Look what flares occur on the sun. Now they are small. We only say that it is a flare. We have no idea what kind of protuberances can reach the Earth. If not by their own emission, then by an electromagnetic one, and so strongly that all means of communication, the internet, and everything on Earth will instantly fail. We depend on our poles and on the electromagnetic effect of the sun. It is the strongest. While other effects are slow, the effect of the sun spreads very quickly, penetrates us, and causes instantaneous reactions up to the point that memory can be erased. This is actually the case. What is memory? An electrochemical system in which various dipoles are combined. They make up the memory of a person. What is an atom? Plus and minus. What are molecules? Plus and minus qualities, formations that combine with external electrons, free radicals, and other formations of a certain valence. That is, all this is electrical, all this is electrochemistry. From CabTV's close-up. Pole inversion, May 15, 2011. To a new round of humanity. Question: the Russian scholar Vladimir Vernadsky came to the doctrine of the nous at the junction of the First and Second World Wars, which, as he wrote, completely changed his consciousness, because he began to analyze the reason why world wars occur and where they lead. Why did scientists of such magnitude see a new stage in the development of mankind during the times of severe upheavals? Answer: what else can lead humanity to some changes if not upheavals? Otherwise we won't wake up. If a man is a desire to receive, to enjoy, and to be filled, then when I get what I want, I no longer have any needs, I will be content. If a new desire has arisen, I fill it. Otherwise, I have no motivation to move, I will not develop myself. New desires arise from within me according to some internal program unknown to me. If they automatically get filled from the outside, then I myself do not exist, there is no movement coming from me. A person can be developed only by constantly arousing newer and newer desires in him and, at the same time, not giving him fulfillment. So he will look for how to fill himself. This leads us to progress. Later we reach some kind of impasse and see that we can no longer fill ourselves. This is a characteristic feature of our generation. Hence we see depression, suicide, drug use, and everything else. New desires appear, but nobody knows how to fill them. Moreover, some desires lie beyond this world. Therefore we begin to relate to our world nihilistically, indifferently, with detachment. We are overwhelmed with desires for something more, to which we see no answers in our world. Where is the source of those pleasures that I desire? This is how nature pushes us to open the noose. From CabTV's close-up. Prophet November 23, 2011.